and I'm joined by my co-host, Vita Voice Furman and Jeremy Moonshine Adams. Welcome to our show, Vision Quest, where we will try and unleash the power of your mind. It's June 6th, and we're airing live on DTMWickedRadio.com. And we want to thank everyone for being here tonight. I'm going to throw out the call-in number. It's 818-431-8214. We'll get that number out a bunch of times tonight. If you want to a question for us or our guest, go for it. I want everyone to sit back, relax, and let's cross the threshold of reality together. If you want to friend us, you can friend me on Psychic Medium Chris George. That's my fan page. Victor the Voice Furman, that's his fan page. And Jeremy Moonshine Adams, that is his fan page. As well, you can join our Vision Quest group on Facebook or our Vision Quest group on Google+. Anyway, why don't we touch on who our guest was last week and what we thought about her? We had Barbara Jean Carey. Jeremy, Victor, what did you think of our guest last week?
I thought she was great, and I thought that she was very informative. She shared a lot with our listeners.
I thought so, too. Well, what about you, Victor?
Well, she's the owner of the Confident Mind Center in Malibu, and her combination of various psychic disciplines, energy healing, and also hypnotics and hypnosis seems to be a very nice blend. She brings a lot to her clients that way.
Yeah, I thought she was a lot of fun. She was a lot of fun, and I thought she was funny, and she kept up with us because you know how we could be sometimes, and I thought she was a great guest, and looking forward to having her on again. I don't know, Jeremy wrote something today on Facebook about me having kind of rant. I think he got the show confused between us and our other show, Second Sight. But since you brought it up, you know what? Maybe I will just a little bit, if you guys don't mind. Do you guys mind?
Go ahead, man.
All right. First of all, I got a little problem with Jeremy Moonshine Adams. I put a post out there on Facebook today. Jeremy, I'm calling your ass out, by the way. Put a post out on Facebook today about a certain troll that's been giving me, what she thinks is headaches on our other shows and site, coming in our chat room and trolling around and whatnot. And, Jeremy was one of my handful of only real friends in the world, comes out and says, I'm giving her power. Mr. Moonshine, are you there? I'm giving her no power, and let me explain to you why, all right? I'm playing that bitch like a fiddle, okay? You think, the devil went down to Georgia to play fiddle? I can play fiddle just as good, okay? She doesn't bother me, okay? She could say whatever she wants about me. She could call me names. It's irrelevant. But the fact of the matter is, it's not me personally she's messing with. It's my show, okay? Now, let me just say a little bit of something about our show. Okay, Victor is my co-host on Second Sight. And when I started this show, I started Second Sight. I am Second Sight. About 5 years ago, I started a television show called Second Sight. And within three shows, it became the number one show on the network. Okay. Then I started a show called Second Sight on the radio, on a blog talk. I started out, had a few thousand listeners, get picked up by another network, a much bigger network. And I slowly built it. And with the wench who is trolling my chat room, I built it to about between 500,000 and 600,000 listeners. Okay, that's awesome. That's an amazing show. There are not many shows out there with 500,000 or 600,000 listeners. That's a huge in that show. But lo and behold, I get rid of the wench. And you know what? Since she's a troll, I'm going to refer to her as Bilbo Baggins. Okay, we get rid of Bilbo Baggins. And what do I do? Bring a professional like the firm, and from 600,000 listeners, bam, we're up to 900,000. Now that's an accomplishment. Okay, that's a huge accomplishment. It's an accomplishment for myself. It's an accomplishment for a beautiful Furman. Now, when somebody could come into our chat room and completely disrespect our show, okay, it's not about disrespecting me. I don't give a damn if she disrespects me. She means nothing to me. She's a slob. Okay, but when she did something Victor and I work so hard for, it pisses me off, okay? So one thing people should know about psychic medium Chris George, I've never been bullied in my life. I've always been the guy who who stood up for being bullied. I have friends on Facebook that I didn't even know from high school that said they friended me because I protected them in high school. I've always stood up against bullying. And in my travels, I find that when you punch a bully in the face, they cower like a little pain in the ass, okay? And which is pretty much what this bully holds to, okay? Because when you punch her in the face, and I would never punch a woman in the face, although I don't consider her a woman, you know, they back. She's been trying to get me on my network that I've been on for 3 years, that I've built a show, 900,000 listeners strong, okay? For a year and a half, and I've been trying to get me thrown off this. That pisses me off. That taking everything I've worked my ass off for, everything Victor DeVoice Furman has worked his ass off for, and completely disrespect us. We have one of the best friggin' shows on the internet. Second to none. I would put Second Sight up against any friggin' show on the internet 7 days a week. Okay? Because we are the best. And now here we have this show, Vision, who is absolutely on par, coming to be on par with Second Sight. When you come trolling in my room and threaten me, tell me watch what I do to you next, threaten me, you know what? Screw you. Kiss me, bitch, because I will be the last person standing. I can guarantee your ass that. There's a rant today. You guys can answer that. You tell me for it. Nothing?
I've got nothing, man.
Victor?
I've got a migraine tonight, so don't ask me for any comments right now.
But, Victor, okay. Do you agree with me or not?
I agree that he disrespected us, but you know what? I don't put any energy into it because I know who he is. I know who he comes from, and it doesn't bother me. To be very honest with you, it doesn't bother me at all.
I can't hear you. Jeremy, I can't hear
you. Oh, I said that's the reason why I said you were giving her power.
Yeah, well, she has no power because, from what I understand, the next time she messes with our show, she's going to have to do some repercussions from our network. So that being
Chris,
have a great show tonight.
Chris, very quickly, in our experience, deal with the negative entity. What do you do with it?
What do I do with the negative entity? I dispatch it.
Right.
I push it away.
Okay, but how do you not give it? You don't feed it anything, right?
I don't feed it anything, correct.
When people feed negativity or demons with energy, it just strengthens. When they acknowledge them, other than to dismiss them, it strengthens them. Think of her in the same way, in the same light. She's a negative entity. Let her go. Done.
All right, done. She's gone. Let's get this of you going. Vic, why don't you introduce our guest for the night?
We have a guest today. I didn't realize we had I'm just kidding. I really welcome a gentleman by the name of Frank Maris. Now, Frank, I understand that's really not your name. It's the name of your maternal grandfather, and you put on his name and a name for this work that you do because of fear or your wife was afraid that if you used your real last name that the publicity would hurt your business. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so Frank says in his introduction to page, and the name of his book is My Journey Down the Reincarnation Highway, the true story of a man who found 9 of his past lives. He says, so who am I really? He says, you must go beyond the present day Frank and look at the complete portrait of my soul. When you look at it, use the advice of one of my mentors who helped me discover reincarnation. Psychic states told me that when you look at all the lives that a soul chooses to live, each individual life should be considered of what soul wants to be. It's the totality of brushstrokes that make up the soul. Unfortunately, he says, I have 2 black brushstrokes that mar my soul's portrait, which I'm sure he can discuss with us tonight. He says, although I lived those 2 lives hundreds of years ago, I'm still paying for them in my current life, perhaps an undertone of karma there. He says, in my soul's long history of 99 lives, I were tribes at the highest level of national power. I love that kind of life, all that it brought. However, with great power comes the obligation of responsibility. In that area, I did not do so well. There were times when I did not look out for the greater good of the people that I led. I acted selfish and out of control. I paid a price in six of my prior lives to make up for this poor behavior. As part of my penance, my younger days as Frank were miserable. Other people in the world would have gladly taken my younger life in exchange to a privileged ex-nobleman like me. Although, to be fair, I have to admit that Frank's years are starting to get pretty good. Using this life as an example, he says, things can turn around if you flip your act and start living spiritually. In words of our guest tonight, Frank Maris. Good evening, Frank.
Thank you. Hey, thank you for having me on.
Well, Frank, how did you discover your reincarnation?
Well, Frank?
Hello, yes. How did I discover my reincarnation?
Yes.
A complicated process. I start out in life as an atheist, not that I had anything against religion or anybody's beliefs, you know, live and let live as far as I'm concerned, but I just couldn't buy the dogma and the illogical aspects of Christianity. So I was an atheist, and I was that way right into my early 50s. But all through my life, I had this obsession, an obsession with World War II. And I don't know why. I don't come from a military family. I'm not by the military. You know, I didn't shot a gun until my mid-40s. But I had this obsession. And from a very early age, I would read books about World War II. And I just constantly read about it and read about it. And I'd watch, I don't know how old you gentlemen are, but, you know, I go back to the 60s as a boy. You remember the TV show Hogan's Heroes?
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, and so I'd watch that. And here I'm an 8-year-old boy watching that and go, you know, this makes the Germans look stupid. I don't like this show. You know, that's a weird response for an American boy. So as time goes on, I studied German for 3 years in junior high. You know, I'm sure you guys studied French or Spanish, whatever, and I'm sure that you guys probably can't speak a lick of a language now. I'm just assuming. But you know how it is. You forget it. Well, I can still speak German. That's weird. And so I was fortunate that later in life I left banking and investments and started my own business with my wife, and it took off, and I had extra play money. And so I started buying guns. But it wasn't just any gun. It had to be guns from World War II. And just not any World War II guns. They had to be German guns from the Russian front. I don't know why. And so eventually I take all my gun collection, and I got a big house, and so I created a gun room or a guy's den, you know, the man cave. And so I had all these German guns up there. And I had German medals, and I'm looking at this. Wait a minute, what am I doing? I just created a shrine to the German soldiers of the Eastern Front. Why would I do that? So that mystery kind of hung on my mind. And my other track to reincarnation was my relationship with my dad, which is really close. And my dad and I, who I later found out are soulmates. He and I are soulmates. But I always had a close relationship with my dad, and then he came down with pancreatic cancer almost 9 years ago, or 10 years ago, and after about a 3-year illness, he died, and so when you're in your, you know, 50s or you start looking at your mortality, and I start thinking, is that all there is? I said, my dad, you know, was a successful guy in life. He gathered wisdom, and now he dies, and all that wisdom goes away. This can't be right. So I started to look to see one last time if there was something out there after life, especially since I was looking at dark hole now. And so I thought a lot about it, and I thought, you know, if I could prove, I'm kind of cutting the story short, but if I could prove that your soul, your consciousness can leave your body, then that proves that there's a soul and that you can live after you die. And so the only way to go out of body, I was reading, was that you have to meditate. So I started to meditate. I learned how to do it. And amazing things start happening pretty quickly. after just a matter of 2 months. I mean, you know, people who talk to me are amazed at my progress. But the first thing that happened was I had a spontaneous out-of-body experience, which was really cool. About a month into my meditation, I remember going to meditating, going to sleep. I had this dream, and this dream was I was in my bathtub reading a book. You know, that's pretty standard for me. And I'm reading a book, and this book was about a child who died, and the parents were all upset. And I'm in a dream, but I'm thinking, I said, well, that's okay. The parents will see this child in heaven. I'm thinking, wait a minute. I'm an atheist. How can an atheist see that? And just then, I felt these hands grab me underneath my armpits in the bathtub, and stood me up. And I go, what the hell is this? And next thing I know, I'm being thrown through the ceiling, and I actually see the joists in my attic as I go through my ceiling, and I rocket out through the roof. And next thing I know, I'm 150 feet up in the air above my bedroom, and I look up, and the stars are just absolutely gorgeous and beautiful. I've never seen stars like this before. And then I had an oh crap moment, like Wile E. Coyote, you know, when he runs off the cliff chasing the Roadrunner. And I go, and I fall back in my bed, and I wake up, and it's 3:07. And I go, what the hell is that? So strange things were happening during his meditations. And then a couple weeks later, I'm in my office meditating. And I don't know about you guys when you meditate, but my head rolls and shakes and goes off through some gyrations. I just kind of let it do its thing. And then it starts making, my head starts doing this involuntary yes motion, you know, up and down. And then it starts shaking no. And then yes again. And I'm going, are you saying yes and no? And my head moves on its own, yes. I go, can I ask you questions? And my head shakes yes. I don't know
and
who the hell I'm talking
during,
to.
This is happening during your meditation.
Yeah. I don't know who I'm talking to. So I think, well, if I can ask questions, what's the number one question I'm going to ask? And just in the next room is all those German guns. And now that I said, was I a German soldier during World War II? Yes. Oh, my God. Well, you know, all I could do is ask you yes or no questions, like a binary system. Well, how do I get information? Well, I have to do it the long...
A human.
Oh, I'm sorry?
I said you were like a human pendulum. That's very, very interesting.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I am a human pendulum. Exactly. And so I have to go the long way. If I have to get messages spelled out, I have to go, well, okay, first word, first letter, A, B, C, you know, like that. So I ask. I said, okay, when did I die? 1941? No. 42? No. 43? No. 44? Yes. So then it comes out, make a long story short, I died May 1st, 1944. I said, was I in the Russian front? Yes. Southern front? No. Central? No. Northern front? Yes. What was my name? And it goes through a long process, but Otto Kosterman. What was my hometown? Mandolin. What's my regiment? 23rd. What's my division? 11th. Well, by this time, you know, I'm so excited by getting this information that I pop out of my altered state, and I'm right by my computer, so I start Googling this stuff. Hey, was, you know, Otto Kosterman? Well, there's no hits on that. But I did get hits on the 23rd Regiment. And the 23rd Regiment did belong to the 11th Division. And the 23rd Regiment recruited by Königsberg. Königsberg, or Mandolin, where I came from, is a suburb of Königsberg. And the 11th Division did serve on the Northern Front. So I had validations, like, right away. I said, holy smokes.
For a second, this story is amazing to me, and you really piqued my interest. I want to know, how long did this process take you to figure all of this out? Because this is just blowing.
Well, it's a journey, you know. So I'm an analyst by trade, you know, early on before I got in my business. And so, you know, I get information and I push it, you know, and I look for the validations. And so and there's a lot more to come and a lot more to come to my story. But I just cracked open the door then. So I kept asking questions. So I said, well, was I anything before Otto? And so what did I, or I ask, what did I die? When did I die before Otto? 1918. I go, uh-oh. I know my history. I said, that's World War I time. I said, did I die in a war? Yes. Did I fight for the Germans? Yes. What's my name? Alfred Hindemann. So I was a young guy who died at the age of 18, in 1918. And so there's the second bloody end. Oh, I'm sorry. And then I found out, I asked also, the first time around about World War II. I said, well, how did I die? Was I shot? No. Artillery? No. I said, threw something out. Bayoneted? Yes. I said, oh, great.
Wow.
So I can't. So I kept going. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was telling you, we got you. I think there's a little bit of sound issue, but you're coming in loud and clear.
Great. So I kept asking, okay, well, who was it before that? Well, that was Carl Hindemann, a dairy farmer in Germany, coincidentally Alfred's grandfather. And before that, I was a cavalryman for the Germans in the 1700s, fighting for Frederick the Great, shot in the back on patrol. And then I keep going back and back and back, but I keep finding I keep getting killed. And I'm just a businessman, you know, no violence in my life, you know, it's pretty easy. You know, it's like, why do I have all this violence and blood in my past? And here I am, it's complete opposite in this life. So I want to know, what did I do to tick off my universe? What did I do? You know, why do I keep dying violently? And actually, that's what my spiritual quest is all about, finding out why, what did I do, because I did do something, what did I do, and why? And so that's what my book and my story is about.
Well, Frank, did these revelations sour you on discovering the reincarnation?
I'm sorry. Did they what?
Did they sour you? In other words, after you discovered these former lives, did they sour you in the process?
Well, you know, it's kind of like sweet and sour. You know, I'm immortal. I don't die. You know, my family doesn't. You know, my loved ones don't die. That's great. And then it's like, oh no. At least for me, I keep dying bloodily and brutally. And it's like a bloody Groundhog Day, you know, the Bill Murray movie. You know, so it's like, hey, it's like, I'm not quite sure what's the better route here. You know, should you just have, you know, mortality and just have a dark end and have nothing? Or do you, or if this includes dying every life, I mean, you know, I wasn't quite sure. So once again, that's the purpose of my spiritual quest, to see, okay, what is the truth and what is the better way?
Well, Mr. Myers, a lot of people believe that when you are reincarnated, you come back as the opposite sex every time. What do you feel about that?
Well, you know something? It's definitely true that you do switch genders, but it's not by a formula. You really design, and that's what I learned. You design your life. And you design your life specifically to address certain issues. And so if it's better to be a female in this life to address those issues or be tested, then you'll be female. If it's better to be male, then you'll be male. And actually, this debate about male and female issues got me into an argument with a channeled spirit guide who's an Indian chief, which we'll get into later, where we kind of disputed what kind of gender I was. But
Jeremy Adams, so this Jeremy Moonshine Adams, he came back as a eunuch. I mean, why would something like that happen?
Well, probably because he was oversexed in the other life and he just wanted to take a life off.
That's a great answer.
So, what are validations and how do they prove your past lives?
Oh, validations? Well, you know,
yes.
I'm sorry, which one of you gentlemen is a psychic now? Is it Victor or Jerry?
It's Christopher.
Christopher is a psychic.
Yeah.
Chris
yeah.
George. Okay, Chris. Well, you know what the big proof of as far as if you really have a good psychic or you're having a good reading is that the spirits give you validation. They give you something that only you know about or something that can be proven. And to me, when I first got into it, that was a high to see validations. That is so cool. And so the validations I got was, for example, when I was reunited with my father, that was early on. I met my psychic trainer, Brenna Pisani. I was looking for a meditation class or group, and I found her through meetup.com. And so I go to her class, but I found out it was a psychic class. I go, oh, wow, do I belong here? Well, I found out that I did. And so as I got to know her, she just kind of matter-of-factly talked about, you know, hooking up clients with their deceased relatives. And I go, wow, you can do that? Not that I believed her, but, yeah, I went for it. I missed my dad. I had a session with her. And I'm reunited with my father, you know, and it was such an emotional experience. You know, tears are coming out of my eyes. And it's definitely my dad, but the validation he gave me was really cool because when he had cancer, we found this herbal tea called Essiac, which is really used in Canada, and it's really effective. And it really, if you have pancreatic cancer, you're gone in 6 months. Well, we had him with this stuff. He hung on for 3 years with no pain, and his doctors were just astounded. And eventually he moved on. And he moved on not because of illness or his cancer. It's just because he got sick of my mom bitching at him. So later on after he left life, he told me he had enough, and he decided to punch out. But that was another reading. But in the first reading, he says, and I asked him, I said, hey, Dad, I always wanted to know, because I was up here in Ohio, and my dad's in Florida, and that's where he lived and passed away. I said, did you stop taking that Essiac? And so he laughs. You know, and Brenda's telling me this, you know, through her, you know, readings, or she's listening and she's passing on the message to me. She goes, and she says, he's laughing. He's saying, well, I don't know about that. He goes, but I would sure take those vitamins that you have in your closet. You know, the ones that in the brown bottle with the pink flowers on it. Well, damn it, there is a bottle of vitamins in my closet with pink flowers on it. So that's a validation. But the validations I've got historically was, for example, when I was looking for, I got information that the spirits sort of kind of bled out this information. They're taking their good old time, but they gave me little snippets of the really bad life I had. Well, my name was Nicholas, and I lived in the 1600s. I was a nobleman, but they wouldn't tell me my last name. They can't give me the name of Putlins, but I couldn't find Nicholas Putlins on the internet or in historical records. So I was kind of flummoxed for a while until finally they gave me the okay that, okay, we're ready to give it to you. And so in this character that I once was, this bad boy, fought in the 30 Years' War. Coincidentally, he stole so much money in that war that he actually bought himself his own castle, which is now a tourist attraction in Czechoslovakia. But so I'm looking for myself. I know I'm Nicholas. I'm trying to find who my last name is. And so Spirit sends me to this one book that was printed in 1910 in Austria. You know, I found it in a bibliography in this other research book. Well, how do you get a book that's written in Austria in 1910? You know, obviously out of print. You're not going to go to a local library to go get it. So I Google it. Well, thank the Lord, Google, as part of its Western Heritage project, put it online. And so I was able to actually get this book. But it's in German, but that's okay. I can read German. And so with PDF, it's in PDF format, so I'm able to search. So I search for Putlins, the name. And it takes me to – I also knew I was a cavalry colonel. So it takes me to a page, and I find Putlins. And it wasn't Nicholas Putlins, but I looked below. It had a upper paragraph which talked about this one cavalry regiment, and another one was below. And below it said Nicholas DeForest, Baron Nicholas DeForest. And I go, is that me? Yes. So they gave me Putlins to find the right page to eventually find my last name, which it sounds complicated, but if you've seen the book, I got the proof there. I reprinted the page. It's really cool.
Well, Frank, I want to go back. You said that you were getting all this information while you were meditating and your head is saying the yes and no. And so to get a name, to go through the alphabet to get your name and your head is going to say yes or no, how do you document that? I can't see how you could be meditating and actually document that if you're having some type of out-of-body. How does that work? Because that, for some reason, that just doesn't make sense to me.
I only had one out-of-body. And that was because I asked the universe to prove that you can't have an out-of-body. You know, Chris knows. You know, if you ask the universe for things, you know, typically they come to you. And so I wanted proof that I was immortal. I got that proof. I went out-of-body once. But getting my information, as I meditated more, I didn't have to meditate. I eventually gained more psychic ability where I could just ask a question without being in a meditative state and get an automatic yes and no. But I would always supplement that yes and no information by going to my psychic trainer and say, hey, I got this message or I got this piece of information. Can you flesh it out? And she would do that. And I had some other psychics. I was in a psychic class of some really talented psychics who were kind enough to work with me. So from a number of different other psychics, they would all give me pieces of the puzzle that they would see or hear or pass along message from spirit, and I was able to put this whole story together and then a lot of times go back in historical records and verify different events.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to know, you know, I understand that you one time got into a heated two-way argument with a ghost. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, that goes back to that gender thing because – all the lives that were revealed to me were male, and I feel very male. So to think that I was once female, it's like, I don't know. I don't mean to make any commentary, but it's like I'm not interested in that. Being female, and so I would ask early on, okay, was I ever a female? And I was getting no answer. And, well, I think Christopher could maybe appreciate this, is that when you first become psychic, that there's no manual that tells you how to work with this and who's out there that you're talking to. And especially since I can't see or hear who I'm talking to, I get yes and no's, I don't know who's on the other line. It's like, somebody telegraphing me. Well, it turns out that my vibrations were a lot of times low, and I would just get low spirits. Who are just playing with me, low spirits, ghosts who are mischievous and who are not on a reincarnation merry-go-round. They just hang around causing trouble. So I got spirits messing with me. And so during one of my psychic training classes, one of my fellow students was an unassuming consultant gentleman, but he had this unusual history in his family where this spirit guide by the name of Shem would channel through his mother, and he was an Indian in several lives, American Indian, and after Greg's mom died, this Shem started channeling through him, and so he gave a demonstration in our class, which was fantastic, where he went into meditation and his eyes kind of fluttered and then it opened and then Greg went bye-bye, and Shem is now in his body. And you could talk to Shem. It was kind of amusing, too, because he's, if you remember the Lone Ranger in Tonto, remember how Tonto used to talk? Kind of grunted, Kimosabe. He sounded just like that. And I thought Greg was kind of pulling our leg, but no, he wasn't. So what was interesting is that you could talk to this Shem and ask him questions and get the skinny on what's going on in heaven. So the first time I encountered him, it was great. He answered all kinds of questions, and it was wonderful. A couple months later, Greg did this act again, not an act, but this process again with Shem. And then I asked Shem questions, and I brought up this gender thing. I said, well, Shem, my spirit guides say that I was never a female. Well, you know, if you know, you know, and so he naturally knew that, you know, that's nonsense. He goes, well, who are you talking to? I said, we're talking to my spirit guides. And he goes, you're not talking to your spirit guides. You're talking to low spirits. And he's berating me. Well, you know, it's a spirit with an attitude. I don't know what the deal is. And so, and then he starts berating me
Frank, let me tell you, you know, if spirits do have attitudes, they have senses of humor, they have anger issues, you know, if they were, they are very much in depth the way they were in life, so that's very, very, very possible.
Yes, oh, I agree, except I didn't know it at the time. You know, the whole class, the big class watching, but they're all in reverence because you think you have a, you know, senior spirit guide down here. You know, you think, oh, you know, it's aura of magnificence and love and all that. Well, he's got an attitude. So it's like he's getting chippy with me. And then he starts getting on my case about my psychic abilities. He goes, well, this is yes and no stuff. This is not right. And I go, wait a minute. This is all you guys are giving me. I'd love to have more, but this is all I got to work with. And then he goes, he gets into something else with me, too. And I go, look, this is all that I get. And by the way, I said, I'm not coming back here again. This life sucks. This is my last time down here. And he goes, you don't make that choice down here. It's only up there. So it's like, I guess you had to be there. I wish it was on video. But, you know, I know what it was. I'm sorry. I missed an important thing. He was a warrior. I was a warrior. And he's giving me attitude. And so I told him, I go, look, I said, you owe me respect. And I used that Indian term, American Indian term, to convey to him what he owed me. I said, look, I counted coup on my enemies. You owe me respect. And he exploded. He goes, and what does that have to do with this life?
Interesting time.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
What is the most heartwarming, and I've asked Chris this also, what is the most heartwarming or inspirational episode from your spiritual journey?
I would say that my dad passed away when my kids were only four. I had kids very late in life. I had actually triplets. That was tough in itself. But my dad died late, they were too young to know him. And I have a niece and nephew too. So he had a total of five grandkids. And so he died, and I always felt bad that he didn't have a chance to spend that much time with his grandkids and to pass along his wisdom. And so I decided to do something really different, to have a Father's Day where we'd all have a group reading, and we'd have my dad come down with all his grandkids there where he could talk to them and give them advice. And so that's what I did through Brenda, and it was just wonderful. He actually, you know, spoke to each one of my kids and to my nephew. And actually gave him advice, and the first thing he did when he came in the area, he told me thank you. So it was heartwarming. It was a very family thing.
That's outstanding. You know, people always ask me what's the most amazing thing that's ever happened to you, in your opinion. I mean, so it seems that a lot of amazing things have happened to you. You know, your claim of all these past lives and knowing how you died and everything, that's a huge statement to make. On this crazy journey that you've been on, what's the most amazing thing that you've witnessed that has happened to you?
Well, you know, it's all amazing. But I guess one that stands out is that my first girlfriend in this life, who broke my heart, as all first girlfriends do, was actually my first girlfriend in a prior life, and that just blew me away. And I got that information, and the reason that we broke up was that I wasn't Catholic, which is a cosmic joke, because in most of my past lives. And many times I'm a Catholic cleric. I was an archbishop once. I was an abbot of a monastery once. I was a Catholic nobleman who fought for the Catholic charge or Catholic cause. So I'm Mr. Catholic, but in this one life, I'm not a Catholic, and I get ostracized for it. So I lose my first girlfriend. And but it's kind of funny is that I was able to track. It's a funny thing that the spirits kind of brought us together, not physically, but in communication. Because another friend who knew her reached out to me, and I sent her my book, and I wanted to know what her reaction was. And so this friend gave me her work number. And so I tried a number of times calling her. She's a library at St. Thomas Aquinas High School out in Kansas someplace. And I, ironically, St. Thomas, you know, another cosmic joke is that as archbishop back in the 1200s, I actually ordained St. Thomas Aquinas as a priest. But that was an amazing thing. That's just funny coincidence.
Out of the nine past lives, can you go in order from the oldest to the most recent? Just what you were.
Sure. Of the ones I know. Well, actually, I was once a Mayan priest. You know, the guys who do sacrifice. I don't know anything about that life, but I just was just told that I was one. But where I got more information was. Back in the late 700s, I was a Scottish village leader who was killed by the Vikings. It was one of the first Viking raids. And so I was defending the village with my brother-in-law beside me. He fell or got struck or something, and he fell to the ground, and I straddled him to protect him with my shield. And as I held my shield up, a Viking came in with his axe and gutted me. So that was, my name was Gorman then. And then the next one I knew was as of Conrad von Hochstaden, Archbishop of Cologne in the 1200s. I'm the guy who got the money and laid the cornerstone for the famous Cologne Cathedral. But I was a bad dude then, womanizer, power hungry, greedy, not a man of God, let's say, and eventually assassinated. Then after him, I was a fisherman named Thomas on the Baltic Sea, once again German. After him, I was the abbot of a monastery, Cistercian monastery, in the Rhineland in the 1500s, lived to be an old man in the 90s. I eventually became blind, got in disputes with the civil authorities, and somebody poisoned me. This doesn't count as far as being murdered, you know, bloodily. I'm sorry?
And this happened while you were an abbot?
Yeah, when I was an abbot. Yeah, you know, that's a very political job. You know, you get into a lot of it's a lot of power, and you get into disputes with the secular authorities. And so somebody bumped me off. I was blind, and I was 90. So anyway, it's time for me to go anyway. So no complaints
well,
there.
Frank, I want to ask you a question from Miss Karen in the chat room. She wants to know if you have had vivid dreams of your past lives?
You know, that's an excellent question because a lot of people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people do. And the answer for me is no. Snippets, brief snippets. Or once in a while, I would use a self-hypnoregression tape, and I would get visions when I was a bishop. For example, I'd see my two horses or a barracks. You know, I had an army. I had my own personal army, so I saw army barracks. I saw one of my armored soldiers. So just in meditation, it's just some, but no. But a lot of people do get those, but not me.
All right. Jeff, you got the next question?
Yes. What is one of the funniest episodes from your spiritual journey?
Oh, that's a good one. This is my famous naked Jennifer Aniston story.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we all like that. who doesn't like Jennifer?
That's what I'm talking
about.
So
I'm I own a medical consulting business that does great, and it's been in for 20 years. So my wife gets the bright idea of opening up an art studio too. That didn't work out so well. But anyway, in the process of creating this art studio, we had to create a website. So I'm working with this web designer who's kind of funny, a funny guy to work with. So I'm in his office, and I'm just BSing with him. And he tells me, you know, he's a recovering alcoholic, and he's just giving me a little bit too much information. But I was curious about his 10-step program, and I said, "Hey, Ken," I said, "as part of your program, do you meditate at all?" He goes, "Oh, yeah, I do." And so if anybody tells me that they meditate, I'm always curious if they get messages or anything happens to them. I always ask if what they get if they meditate. I go, "Well, Ken," I said, "you get any messages or see anything?" Nope. But he goes, "I have this ability to manifest. You know, in our business, my wife is always on my case." His wife and him are partners in this business. "You know, when cash flow gets really tight and she's all freaking out, all I go is go meditate and I manifest checks. And son of a gun, if the next day or so, checks show up and my cash problems are solved." And I go, "Wow, that's pretty good, Ken. That's called manifesting." He goes, "Yep, I'm pretty good at it." So I make a joke. I go, "Well, you know, Ken, that's really good, but I'll bet you couldn't manifest a naked Jennifer Aniston coming through that door, I mean his office door." And he looks at me, he smiles, and he reaches into his drawer, and he takes out the stack of cards, birthday cards. He takes the very first card off that stack, opens it up, and it's a naked picture of Jennifer Aniston.
And you actually got to see it.
Oh, yeah. I just busted up laughing. I go, "Okay, all right, you win."
Hey, you got to see Jennifer Aniston naked. Who's better than you? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Frank, listen, you know, I'm a psychic medium. I'm a channel. I do exorcisms. And unfortunately, I have to deal with a lot of what normal people would think is scary things, scary entities, spirits, bad energy, demons even at times, you know, not too much, but here and there. There has to have been some scary things that have happened to you on this crazy journey that you've been on. Could it make you talk about you?
Yeah, well, you know something, it was scary, but I'm just a civilian, so, you know, I don't know what real scary is. But my scary was 4 months after my dad died, and I'm still in the grieving process. And my son, Brian, is like a clone of my father. And so at that time, they were 4 years old, and I had taken the daycare for some reason. And so I took Brian. We have a van, you know, so I remember taking Brian out. He was the first one I grabbed to take out, and I put him in his car seat. So I don't know if you guys have kids. You know, the car seats, you got those buckles, and there's a lot of rigmarole you have to do. And so I'm putting this buckle on his chest, right? And I'm looking at his face, and just then, my dad's face appears overlaid over his. And it was like, it was gray, and it wasn't moving. It was like a snapshot, but it was a gray and kind of without expression on it. And I'm looking, and it just flashed for half a second, but it was definitely there. And I, like, startled. I go, "What the hell is that?" And I knew it was my dad. So I go in the house, and I told my wife what I saw. She goes, "Wow, that's weird," because she actually remembered it. But at the time, I just thought, I'm hallucinating. Well, in that first... And so so luckily for me, that's the only scary thing that happened. And my dad confirmed during our first our reunion when I used the psychic medium to find him. Yeah, he goes, "That was me." And Brenda, the psychic medium, says, yeah, I see. It was in the garage, wasn't it? Yep. So I don't have the scars that you do, Christopher, but and that's not much. But, you know, for the first time around, that is scary.
But you don't have the scars. You don't have to have the scars. And everybody has their own little scary. You know, what's scary to me might not be scary to you or to Jeremy or to, you know, anybody else. You know, things to me, I don't get scared. I get more nervous at the living people as opposed to the dead, because I've learned to really work with the dead. I'm scared when I deal with the negative entities and whatnot. But when I deal with somebody on the street with a gun on me, that scares the shit out of me. So everybody has their own personal fear factor or scare threshold, and who's to say who it is for each of us? So I get it.
Everybody knows, Chris, you need one more teeny little thing to that list that you're scared of. It's small, it's white, it's mouse. Everybody knows.
Oh, come on.
It's okay. It's okay.
First of all, Moonshine, if you remember, I kicked the mouse's ass. So.
So, Mr. Mayors, are there more people in the world remembering their past lives? Is there like, you know, this cosmic energy that's leading everybody to see their past lives?
I think there is. You know, one of the things that Stacy Wells told me, you know, I went to Stacy Wells because I would do a lot of reading as far as pre-birth planning. And Robert Schwartz has a series of books about that, and he uses a lot of great psychics to draw out pre-birth planning from certain subjects that they work with. And so Stacy Wells, her work really, really impressed me. And so I wanted to find out, you know, what does my plain white bread life have to do with all the violence in my past? And so Stacy, you know, did a great reading on me and told me what I needed to know. But she said something in passing was kind of interesting. She goes, people have come to this time period, or their souls have come to this time period because they have unfinished business. You know, which kind of segues into a question for what I have for Christopher, which is kind of buzzing through the psychic community, is the coming change. And I would assume you're aware of it, of what's coming, right, Chris?
For me, you know, people say it's a spiritual awakening for people. I personally think that it's been happening for years. The only change that I see coming, honestly, I think that there's going to be another war. And I think it's going to happen within the next 2 years. But, you know, the change that all the psychics are talking about is this big spiritual awakening that we were supposed to have for 2012. I thought the whole thing was bullshit, to tell you the truth. Because I think that we've been working towards that for years. What is it that you think?
Well, I think you're right. It's, in the Columbus psychic community, and you know, it's. I mean, we got an economic crash coming. I mean, it told me that the bond market starts cracking in fall of 2015, followed by a huge depression and hyperinflation, which is going to really cause a lot of social unrest. And then we move into the big changes, you know, where, you know, they're changing this world, they're changing up everything. And so because of this great spiritual upheaval that's coming and going to the what they call the third epoch, people are aware now of their past lives because they do have unfinished business. And so I think there's a lot more spirituality. A lot more people have psychic abilities nowadays, I think, than they did in the past.
Well, you know, I do think that there are more people coming to their psychic power. I think people need to believe in something, teachers to help them learn how to be more intuitive and if you want to say more psychic. So I think that's a very big thing that's happening in the world. I see it every day. I see people wanting to come to me for psychic development classes. We have Ms. Harry, who's in the chat room. So she's searched out know, mentoring. She's taking psych development. And a lot of people are doing this. And I think that that's a big positive. And I think we really need a lot of people like this. I think we need a lot of positive energy being put out into the universe. Because I personally feel that there's a lot of negativity out there, a lot of evil. And I think over the years, the negativity and evil has become more prevalent in our society. And what happens with negativity is negativity feeds off of negativity, and it only gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And you need people who are spiritual and people who are willing to put, you know, their spirituality out there to combat that. And thank God, in my opinion, we are seeing a lot of people putting themselves out there. So that's a positive for me.
No, I agree with you. I just think the awareness of past lives go hand in hand with it. Anyway, just my personal opinion and from limited observations.
Well, we have
for the people who write me.
Okay. Well, we have 5 minutes left to the first hour, and I want to know, what is the greatest satisfaction that you've received by writing this book?
Well, you know, the satisfaction I get is, you know, there's a lot of people who do have these past life memories, you know, who have more vivid, like that one caller or person who emailed in talked about, you know, they're having dreams, and they don't know how to deal with it. You know, I'm fortunate to be in a community in Columbus, Ohio, that seems to be a hotbed of psychics where we can lean on each other and learn from each other. But there's a lot of people out there who aren't in a community, and they know how to deal with these things, and people think they're nuts. And so I think spirit kind of guides them to my book, and they resonate with it. They go, oh, my God, I'm not alone. This happened to somebody else, and I'm not nuts. And so I've had people write to me thanking me, which is just so great. You know, one was a Titanic survivor. Another, I get a lot of fellow German comrades, you know, World War II a German pilot, a lot of ex-German soldiers. And just today, a Mexican girl who read my book called my psychic trainer, had a reading, and she told her the story of, and they figured out why she was afraid of loud noises and bangs. Well, it turns out she was a Jewish girl in World War II in Poland, just at the beginning of the Holocaust, when they would load people on vans and they would, you know, take the exhaust and put them in the back of the van and kill people that way. You know, when the killing process was primitive, and so she had a vivid memory of that, and so it's just very gratifying for people to reach out to me and thank me for sharing my story with them, because it made them feel better. So that's very gratifying to me.
I can see how that could be gratifying. That's outstanding. But I'm curious, how often do people reach out to you to talk about past lives because you've written this book?
Well, you know, I've got, you know, a website. I've got, you know, a Facebook page. You know, and so every once in a while something will pop up and you know, they'll tell their story. And so it's erratic, but they're all cherished.
Well, why don't you give out your information if people want to contact you or get your book? Take this opportunity to do that.
Sure, well, I appreciate that. So the book's name is My Journey Down the Reincarnation Highway. It's available at a number of ebook distributors, most notably Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And you can go to my website at www.reincarnationhighway.com. which tells you how to get my book. And also I have a blog there and a lot of information about reincarnation and about some of my later psychic adventures. I'm always into some kind of hijinks, so it's kind of entertaining. So once again, reincarnationhighway.com. So I welcome everybody to go to the website and read my book. You know, I think they'll find it interesting. People enjoy it. I get good reviews on it.
All right, Alfie. Well, that was the first hour with the guest from here. It's been a very entertaining first hour, and stay tuned. We'll be back about 5 minutes for hour number two.
The Caring Coaching Center is a proud sponsor of DTM Wicked Radio Network. What would it mean to you to have better health, more energy, more vitality, and an all-around better life? At the Caring Coaching Center, our mission is to be your partner in helping you reach your health, fitness, and lifestyle goals. We do this through a dynamic 6-month program that helps our clients reach their goals and their full potential. And it all starts with a free, no obligation, 15-minute health history consultation. Just visit us at the www.thecaringcoachingcenter.com.
Rolling Hills Asylum. Located in East Bethany, New York, just minutes between two major airports, Rolling Hills Asylum is a hotbed of paranormal activity. They have been featured on Travel Channel's Ghost Adventures, Paranormal Challenge, as well as Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters. Rolling Hills Asylum has been named the number 2 most haunted location in the United States by HauntedNorthAmerica.com. The property was established on January 1st, 1827, as the county poor farm. Throughout the years, it has operated as a poor farm, infirmary, orphanage, tuberculosis hospital, nursing home, and more. Past residents and inmates consist of widows, orphans, physically disabled, mentally unstable, murderers, and more. Over 1,700 bodies are buried in unmarked graves, and hundreds more deaths went undocumented. Rolling Hills Asylum is known for a plethora of phenomena, including disembodied voices, doors slamming, footsteps, sounds of furniture moving, full-body apparitions, shadow people, ghostly touches, and numerous Class A EVP. Rolling Hills Asylum proudly offers historical and flashlight tours, 4 and 8-hour public ghost hunts, 8 and 9-hour private ghost hunts, and more, by appointment or pre-booking only. For more information, please visit www.rollinghillsasylum.com. That's www.rollinghillsasylum.com. Or give them a call, 585-502-4066. That's 585-502-4066. Rolling Hills Asylum. What are you doing this weekend? Rolling Hills Asylum. Located in East Bethany, New York, just minutes between two major airports.
We're back for hour hello, everybody. We're back for hour number 2 of Vision Quest. I'm psychic medium Chris George, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jeremy Moonshine Adams. Victor the Voice Furman had to take a quick leave tonight. He wasn't feeling well, so we wish him the best. Hope he feels better. And but that's okay. You still got the good old psychic and crazy old Moonshine, and we have an outstanding guest. His name is Frank Mears. Hope I'm saying that last name right. And we're talking about reincarnation.
Mears, like Roger Mears.
Father Mary, okay. And we are having a great discussion on past lives and reincarnation. And listen, people, our call-in number is 818-431-8214. If you want to call in for a question for our guest, please call in. We love the call-ins. So the number again is 818-431-8214. Yeah, the first hour went pretty fast, and it was a fun first hour. And here we are back for the second hour. Let's do this, Jeremy. What's the first question, buddy?
What is a typical but surprising response you get from spirits when you're communicating with them?
Well, you know, this came early on, which was kind of surprising. And I know Chris may back me up on this. Is the first thing that my dad said to me when I made communication that first time I was reunited with him, he said, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." And we had this family dispute that my mom started, and my dad sort of took her side, and it caused a big family rift. And but going into the afterlife, he felt bad about it. And the first thing he did was apologize for it. And I was really surprised by that. And then later on, a couple months later, I took my brother to a reading with my psychic trainer so he could talk to my dad too. But you know, Chris, you know that once you open up that psychic hotline or a telephone line, other spirits just pile in. And so,
absolutely.
And so one of the spirits that showed up at my brother's reading was, my brother's in his late 40s at the time when we had that reading. And so when he was a teenager, he worked at a bakery. And this old crotchety baker who owned the shop, who eventually passed away, came to my brother. And they weren't that close, but the spirit came and apologized to him for not being more involved or not wanting to know more about his employees' lives. And I was just dumbstruck. I go, here this guy died. He's in the afterlife. And here's one of his employees. And, that's not a sin. That's just a minor thing, no big deal. But yet he felt compelled to come to the psychic or to the heavenly telephone line to apologize to my brother for not getting to know him better. And it just struck me as just amazing. I don't know. Did you encounter that, Chris, at all? A regret?
Many times. There are many times I give readings. Just the other day, I gave a very, very sweet woman a reading. And the first thing her father said was that he was sorry. And she said, this makes no sense to me because we had a wonderful relationship. My father was the greatest father in the world. He never did anything bad to me or against me ever in my 48 years. She was a 48-year-old woman. And I said, well, I don't know what to tell you, but he's telling me that he's sorry. And she says, and me, she kind of gave me that look like I was a fraud, which pissed me off. So I kind of opened up even more, and he said, tell her I'm sorry about when she was 16 when I didn't believe her. So spirit, hold on. And when I said that to her, she started crying, and she says, oh, my God, I forgot about that. And you know what? This is something that this spirit, he was in his 80s or in his late 70s when he passed, and he's thinking about when his daughter was 16 years old, and he wanted her to know that he was sorry for not believing her about a certain something that she said when she was 16. So I get that all the time. They always want to apologize for something.
Yeah.
So that makes sense to me.
Well, I had a question. it was a follow-up, and I just lost it. Okay, here we go. I remember now. This is actually for both of you. How many times have people walked up to you and told you that you're full of shit?
All the time, especially my wife.
That's funny. Well, I can answer that question. I don't know how many times. I would say maybe three. One time I was in the street, and I was drawn to give this woman a reading. I just went up and started talking to her, and some lady walked up to me and said, you're the white devil, and you're a liar, and, told the woman that she shouldn't believe me. Meanwhile, I gave this woman some really great information. But one time that really, where somebody said that I was a fraud, and it bothered me more than anything, it really bothered me, because she went on my fan page and said that I was a fraud. I had done a seance for about 15 people, and when you do a seance, the thing about seances, I can't guarantee that somebody's going to come through for you. All right, I can guarantee you spirit will come through, and more than likely one, two, three, maybe four spirit will come specifically for somebody there. I was in trance, and 14 out of the 15 people were like blown away. They loved it. Oh, my God, Chris George, you're the best, blah, 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 blah. Basically telling me how great it was. This one woman looked at me. She goes, I'm not buying it. I said, okay. I'm not going to try and you know, do anything more than I've done. I mean, this is what I do. Either you get it or you don't. She said, well, I wanted to hear from somebody. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, did you? She says, yeah. I said, well, you wanted to hear from somebody. You did. And I'm a fraud. She was like, well, I don't like what he said. I said, well, it's not for you to like what he said. What he said is what he said. I said, what he said, is it true what he said? She said, yeah. I said, okay, so you wanted somebody to come through. He did. He told you something that was true, but you didn't like what he said, so I'm a fraud? She said, yeah. You know, she went on my fan page and wrote that I was a fraud, which wow. really pissed me off. But that was the only real time anybody's ever said that to me.
Well, you know, Chris, I get roasted on my fan page. You know, I get mostly good feedback, but then I get, oh, you're a charlatan. You're just in it for the money. And honestly, God, truth, I'm losing money on this venture. But, you know, this is part of my spiritual mission is kind of spread my stories to people who need it. But, you know, I'm accused of making all kinds of money and being a liar and a fraud and, you know, it's nonsense. So,
I'll say this. Yeah, Facebook could be brutal. I'll say this. You know, whenever you do something, whether you're the real deal or not, people are going to criticize you. When you put something out there for people to read, okay, it's their right to criticize, whether they think you're full of baloney or you're the real deal. So, you know, I go through this all the time on Facebook. You know, somebody wrote something on Facebook the other day about a paranormal investigator named Zach Baggins, who I think is the biggest joke in the paranormal community. And I said that. And the person got very upset with me for saying that. I'm like, listen, if you put something out there to the public, it's there to be scrutinized. You know, it's there for, you know, I'm allowed to put an opinion out there. I put stuff on Facebook all the time that people don't agree with. I mean, I get inboxes from people telling me, you know, I'm a horrible person. How could you write something like that and they unfriend me? It's irrelevant to me. And I'm going to tell you it should be irrelevant to you. Whether people believe you or not, whether we believe you or not, it's all irrelevant. It's what you believe. You did something that, you know, that you wanted to do. You know, how many people actually get to write a book and have it published and whatnot? So, I mean, that's a plus. And I wouldn't give a damn what anybody thinks about anything.
Well, actually, it's a gift to me when they criticize me. Because in my book, you know, Stacey Wells talks about why I had those lives and you know, the whole point of this exercise is that I've got to improve, because in the past, if somebody said a contrary word to me, I'd take my sword out, my pistol out, or shoot them. I'd kill people. They would tick me off. And so now I'm getting an opportunity to be abused or I'm taking this as a learning experience to where I can control my temper and fend it off and not have it affect me. So actually, it's just sort of, you know, it's part of my life lesson, and it's a blessing. So I don't let it get to me. It's actually part of my spiritual lesson is how I look at it.
All right. Well, I got another question for you. I know that you visited your own tomb last summer. Could you tell us what that was about?
Sure. That's weird to be able to visit your own tomb. I mentioned that I was an archbishop, and historically a famous one if you get into German history, or I should say an infamous one. And I always knew that when Brenda first told me that she saw that I was high up in the Catholic hierarchy, I said, you know something? Here's an opportunity where I could find myself in the history books or in documentation, because the church is really good about documenting who is who and such. And so I eventually find myself as Conrad von Hochstaden, founder of the Cologne Cathedral. Well, he's got a tomb of honor in the cathedral. And so I went to Germany last year on a family vacation, and I made sure that I went to Cologne. And so I was curious. I said, well, you know, if you go to visit your old body, is there some kind of vibration? Is there some kind of physical manifestation? Do you feel something? I was really curious what the reaction would be. And so when we came out of the train station, and the train station is right next to the cathedral, I remember looking at the cathedral, and I had this big grin on my face. It's like, I'm back home. You know, this is my creation, you know. And so when I was able to actually find my tomb in the back, and it was in a beautiful location, ironically, I felt nothing other than just wonder to gaze upon my old face because there's a bronze statue, if you will. You know how I forgot how they, in the old days, how they would they'd make a caricature of you, of like a statue, but laying down on a tomb. And so there's my face, and there I was, and I'm just looking at myself, and I left a white rose at my grave, if you will. But I thought there'd be some kind of vibration or some kind of vision happening, and it's kind of nothing. And maybe because my body was no longer there. I found out later that in the late 1700s or early 1800s, the French soldiers sacked a cathedral, and they were emptying out all the tombs, looking for, you know, jewels and booty, and all the bodies, including mine, were kicked out in the street. So all that was there was left was my the statue of me. So they kind of reconstructed the tomb, but the tomb was empty. So anyway, it was a cool experience. Unfortunately, I didn't get any vibration out of it, you know, supernatural, but it was still cool.
Well, tell us about your out of body training at the Monroe Institute.
Well, that was an amazing place. You know, I'm a piker compared to Chris George as a psychic. You know, I'm just a human pendulum. I only get infrequent clear vision visions. Only when they tell me something important will they give me a vision. Other than that, my TV screen's blank. I only had one clairaudient message, which is a funny story I could tell another time. So I have limited ability, so I'm kind of like an AM radio, while Chris George is like a high-definition, you know, interactive four-way quad speaker system where he gets
You're going to make his head swell, and then that causes problems. So.
No. Listen, you got to give credit where credit's due. Like I said, I'm a piker, and I wish to be like Chris George. Okay, and I do a lot of meditation to try to get to half of that level, but it ain't happening. So I thought, well, you know, one way to circumnavigate my limitation as a psychic, so I could actually see and hear, is to go out of body, but on command. And so if I can, you know, do that, well, then I could go to the other side and see and hear and touch, and it'd be cool. And so I read the works of Robert Monroe, who started the Monroe Institute, dedicated to meditation and to out-of-body studies and training. And I also read the works of Bill Buhlmann, who's sort of like, to me, the successor to Robert Monroe. And Bill Buhlmann, really, I really resonate with him because he was also a German soldier in World War II. For some reason, being a German soldier on the Eastern Front is somehow the ticket to spirituality to me. And so Bill spent 40 years doing out-of-body work. And so I always wanted to go to Monroe Institute, and when I investigated the courses, I found that Bill Buhlmann was actually going to teach a course there for a week. Damn it, nothing's going to stop me from going there. So I went. And it's a fantastic place to go. It's in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's beautiful there. And it's sitting on a mountain of quartz crystal. Now, I don't know about,
wow.
You know, they say that concentrates energy. But then I had a class of probably about 22 people. Half of them were psychics. You know, most of them were intuitives. And so you had this concentration of high vibration, and sitting on that quartz mountain, my psychic abilities just took off. I'm having visions. I'm having comrades from World War II come visit me. It was just amazing. Even silly things. I don't know if you know this little video game called Bust and Flow, where you have these multicolored balls that you know, eliminate. But there's like dots on a computer screen. Well, I was playing that game, waiting for my flight to fly down
to
Virginia.
Frank, you said multicolored balls?
Balls, yeah, like balls, like little dots, eliminate.
That just reminded me of something. Jeremy was telling me that Kenesha actually painted his multicolored just the other night. Anyway, go on with your story. I'm sorry.
You dick.
Wow, lucky you, Jeremy.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm talking about. That's right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. No, that's good. That's a good story. That's a better story than mine, let me tell you. So anyway, the first meditation I have at the Monroe Institute, I have this vision of me being this field of rather multicolored dots. All these balls turn, or these dots turn into three-dimensional balls. I said, oh, boy, I'm in for a hell of a week. This is going to be great. And it was. It was like going to a psychic Disneyland where all your powers are all amped up. And so we got to listen to Bill's lectures and go through training exercises. I mean, it takes 6 months of study and work to and hard work that you have to do at home to get yourself in condition to do this. But it was a fantastic experience. But for me, I got to be one quarter of Chris George, and that was worth the price of admission alone. So that was great. And unfortunately, once I got home, I deflated like a balloon right back to Frank Maris.
So I'd like to know, how can my past lives affect me?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Things carry forward. There was early on in my spiritual journey, where I didn't meet up with Brenda yet, so I was looking for direction, and I went to this massage therapist, and his name is Tony. Well, it turns out he's also psychic. You know, he could see shadows out of the corner of his eyes, very intuitive. He does a lot of energy work. And so he clued me in that my out-of-body experience that I had was legitimate, because he had one too. And Tony's actually, I still see him, out. He's part of the spiritualist community here. But he told me, when he was doing his energy work, he says, as a soldier in your past life, you said you got stabbed, didn't you? It was in the left shoulder, wasn't it? I go, yeah, because I see this image, or I feel this image of a blade in your left shoulder. That it left an energy cyst in you. I go, that could happen between lives? He goes, oh, yeah. And so he actually worked out that energy cyst, and he said it jumped out of my body and went into him and went out his foot. And so he fell. He goes, boy, that hurts. And I go, well, do I have other energy system? He goes, yeah, you got wounds all over your body. And so that was the first clue that the residue of all my murders, I was still carrying them with me. And I read something else that you carry a lot of those memories in your DNA. And there's a lot of data storage available in DNA that we don't use for reproduction. But somehow these memories are held for your use, you know, during your training in this life. So, you know, these traumas go forward, and not the lessons. You know, we get amnesia when we come down here, but the trauma and it goes forward, and the obsession, like the obsession I had about German guns. You know, that's something that stayed with me. So yeah, it does carry forward.
Well, what are some of the signs that I may have a past life problem?
Well, I don't know. What do you call a past life problem? Other than maybe a unhealthy obsession.
I like to add to that. You know, you say what is a past life problem? I'll give you a for instance. I have a friend, and I've told this story on my other show. I have a friend who's absolutely brilliant. She's a feng shui expert. She's an astrologer. She's a numerologist. She has lectured in colleges. She should be very well off. She should be very comfortable with her life. But she lives in poverty. And the reason she lives in poverty is because she plays with a pendulum all day, and she tries to figure out her past lives. And in every past life, it's been torture, and she's been killed by her husband in every past life, and she's been a prisoner. And how do I fix my past life? How do I fix my past life? She forgets that she has a life right now to live. And that's a problem. You know, that's an example of problems in a past life. People who say, well, because I was a prisoner, I was locked up in a cage as a prisoner in my past life, that's why I'm a prisoner now. And I say, that's bullshit. You're a prisoner now because you allow yourself to be a prisoner now. That's my personal opinion. So that being said, I will ask the question again, and maybe, you know, that kind of puts it in perspective. You know, what are signs that you may have had a problem in your past life?
Well, you know, Chris, I couldn't agree with you more. You said it perfectly.
Okay,
you have
thank
these
you.
Hauntings. I, you know something? I'll give you an example. I'll give you an example because my next book, my sequel, deals with it's a sequel, but it goes into romance, if you will. I got reconnected with my soulmate. You know, and people misuse the term soulmate. They use it in a romantic term that, oh, my God, my soulmate. You know, we're just so perfect together. We're so in love. That makes us soulmates. No. A soulmate's defined as, we are all chips off the divine energy, the divine consciousness. And so souls are sort of born in groups. And so your group, when it's born, you know, my group is actually six souls, but the groups tend to be more than that. You have the same vibration, you know, because you're like twins, you know. It's like, so you know each other and you spend a lot of lives together. And so you're naturally drawn to each other when you're in the flesh. And so we help each other by playing different parts in lives. And so this woman, I've been involved with in 12 other lives, I found out, with this woman. And so we've been married many times, and so this is deep, deep physical connection between us. This is amazing. But she comes down here with an issue in that she's trying to get away from domineering men, domineering, you know, emotionally abusive men. And so that's why we never got married, because we had this wild affair when, you know, 20, 25 years ago. And it was just, you know, soulmate sex. It's just fantastic. And we should have been married, but she could not get past this guy who would not let go of her. So she'd sleep with me, but go out with this guy. And so I got tired of waiting for her, and I moved on. Well, son of a gun, is that here, most of the time, if you blow it, well, then you have to come back in another life to readdress this very same problem. So that kind of goes back to what you said, Chris, where you got abused enough in the last life, and so that's why I'm abusing this one. That's true. Well, here, my soulmate gets a second shot in the very same life. So she marries a guy who's emotionally abusive, and we start getting involved with each other, and here we can move on and finally have a life together. But her challenge is that, once again, she's got to get by emotional guy, an abusive guy. And so there's just an example of and she's got to rise above it. And so you're absolutely right, Chris. You've got to rise above these issues, yeah, and conquer them and not wallow in them.
Absolutely. And I find that people wallow in past lives. You know, people come to me for readings all the time. They'll say, what was I in a past life? And, you know, I can do it. I do it all the time. But my problem is it's very hard for me to prove to them what they were in their past life. I can tell them whatever I want. I mean, I would never lie. If I don't get something, I don't give it. But, you know, and they're so worried about what happened in their past lives that they literally forget to live this life. And that's a message I want. You know, we have a lot of people listening tonight. That's something I want you guys to resonate with. You know, you can acknowledge a past life, but don't dwell on it, because by doing that, you're giving away this life. You're not living today. And it's so important to live today, because, you know, who knows what tomorrow brings. So live your life now, and don't live it in the past, because all it's going to do is screw you up. And that's my message for the day. Go ahead, Jeremy. I know you have a question there.
It is, because I'm still trying to figure out how I was an Egyptian high priestess in a past life.
Well, everybody's been an Egyptian priestess in their past life, according to half the psychics out there.
Oh, man. All right. How can
Let me add on to what Chris said. Chris, once again, you couldn't have said it more perfect. Because people write to me and go, oh, I want to learn about my past lives. And my response is always, why? Why? It's like, if you want to know about your past lives, when you die and you cross over, you will know about every second or every minute about every past life you had. You will get that information. What's your hurry? What do you want to know about it other than curiosity? You know, you're sent down here to do a job, and not to be distracted by this stuff. And the only reason that I learned about these past lives is because it has bearing on the work and on the lessons that I'm learning on, that I'm learning, which was, you know, self-esteem for my soul. So it put all things in perspective for me. So there's a reason that I learned about mine. It wasn't that I was curious. Well, I'm curious, but there was a reason behind it. So I couldn't agree with you more, Chris. You just have to concentrate on this life, and then you will know everything once you get to the other side.
Absolutely. Good, Jeremy. I know you had a question there.
Yeah. How can past lives influence me in my day-to-day life, and why do we carry around unresolved issues from life to life?
Well, it's a test. That's what it's all about. It's a test. You know, an extreme example is one that Stacey Wells told me. She told me about the five typical things that souls work on. And it doesn't mean that you work on all five in a given life. You know, mine was to work on self-esteem and to learn that happiness comes from within, that I don't need other people to make me happy. That's my lessons in this life. So I asked Stacey, I said, well, what's the hardest lesson to overcome? And she says addictions, compulsions. That is the hardest one to overcome. And she goes, I had one client who spent 100 lives getting over compulsion. And so it's like a video game, you know, where if you lose the video game, you get a new life. You know, you keep pressing the reset button. Same idea. So it took this character that she was talking about 100 lives to get something right. So you keep doing it until you get it right.
You know, I'd like to know, what is it that most people don't remember from their past lives? I mean, that's a hard question to answer, I would think.
What they don't remember is pretty much, I must not get any of the question, because you're given amnesia for a reason. And that is,
right.
Is that so you start fresh, that you don't continue, you know, if you're working on the same problem over and over again, that you don't pick up the ball where you left off last time, because you obviously were going down a wrong alley anyway. So they give you a different perspective and try it another way. And so that's the reason you get amnesia. And also, too, I was told that the human mind, you know, can't possibly remember or access all that information anyway. So there's a reason why we have this amnesia. But some people have, you know, don't have complete amnesia, so that's why they remember parts of their past lives.
Well, you're listening to Vision Quest. He's Chris George. I'm Jeremy Adams, and this is DTM Wicked Radio Productions. The call-in number is 818-431-8214, and we are speaking with Frank Mayers and talking about his book, My Journey Down the Reincarnation Highway, the true story of a man who found nine of his past lives. Yes, I gave it, 818-431-8214.
Call in, people. If you have any questions, call in, please. Go ahead, Frank.
Well,
if somebody calls in, I have a signed copy of My Journey Down the Reincarnation Highway, and whoever calls in, you get it.
Nice.
Well, you know,
nice.
I could throw something out here for discussion. I think it's kind of interesting, which I learned from Bill Buhlman, who spent a lot of time visiting heaven. What is the reward for learning all your lessons through reincarnation? I got the answer to that.
Well, what
can
is
you
it?
Guess, Chris? Okay.
I'd like you to tell us. What is it?
Okay. Here's Buhlman is just a fascinating guy to talk to and a great lecturer. And so what he talked about, how heaven is structured, is everybody goes back, no matter what you did in this lifetime, you go back to heaven or that higher vibrational dimension. And in heaven, what it's all about is that everybody, all souls are powerful, and you can manifest your own reality. And so, and that's a powerful, powerful ability that has to be controlled. So if you share heaven with other souls, you have to be able to be trusted with this ability. And so they only let you into the higher levels of heaven, which is more freedom, if you prove that you have self-control on Earth. And Earth is the hardest testing ground in the entire universe. Most souls don't come here because they're scared to death to come here because it's so tough. But if you prove yourself down here and you pass, you're allowed into higher and higher levels of heaven. Heaven's great no matter where you go. It's like pizza. There's no bad pizza, but there's better pizza.
Well, no, I disagree with that. I had a slice of pizza today made by a couple of Mexicans. It was the crappy cheese, and the sauce had a lot of sugar in it, which you're not supposed to put sugar in sauce, and it was actually bad pizza. So I gotta debate you on that one, Frank. I'm sorry.
All right. Okay. How about sex with Jennifer Aniston? It's
okay,
always
well,
good. No matter which mood she's in. How's that? Is that better?
That's better.
I've got a question for you. In your book, you know, you just spoke highly of heaven, but in your book, you say that you've spoken to God, and she has told you that there is no devil, no Satan, and there are no demons. And you said that God is a female. I mean, what can you tell us about that experience?
It was kind of revealing. But you know something makes sense. I mean, spirits don't have bodies. And genitalia makes you male or female. So if you don't have a body, then you don't have genitalia, meaning that you're not male or female. So to assume that God is that guy with a robe and a long gray beard is kind of, that's just a cultural thing. So God is actually sexless. But when I connected to the source and I asked him, her, you know, which gender do you identify the most with? She said female. And I said, it makes sense. More mothering, more loving, not the stern, punishing father. And so that's what she told me, that she identifies more with the female, and not that she is a female, but thinks that way. We're all her children. And like I said before, Earth is a tough test. We have the duality of man, where you have to play, somebody's got to play a bad part to create a test down here. Somebody's got to be a Hitler. Somebody's got to be a murderer to put us through a tough test. Because this is a test where we have to rise above these bad things. We don't need a – go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, we don't need a Satan to encourage us to be evil. I mean, we're pretty bad enough as it is. We don't need any encouragement. Down here, we're just, some of us are just as evil as can be, and we don't need any divine encouragement to be more evil. So,
Frank, I completely agree with that statement right there. I completely agree with that.
I do too, but I have another question. How can you believe in one spiritual being, even, if it was Buddha or whatever, it doesn't matter. How can you believe in none? In one, and then not believe in its exact opposite? I mean, if you believe in one, to me, it's like automatically accepting, okay, well, here's all this good. Well, here's all this bad, but I know what I can do to stay over here on this side instead of going over here to the bad side. How can you believe that there is a heaven and there's multi layers in heaven and you move up, but you don't believe in a hell or demons, for that matter?
Well, that's a great question. The answer is this. Heaven is our home. You know, it's not a reward. It's where we live. We only come down here to be tested. And it's just a blink of an eye, in the spiritual point of view. So up there, it's all blissful. There's no fighting. You don't have to eat. You don't have to earn a living. And you can manifest anything you want, and you have it. So it's a perfect world. But you know something? If you live in a perfect world all the time, then sometimes you don't appreciate it. You need to have the other experience to appreciate what you have. So you come down here. So heaven is all good. I mean, as long as you manifest, as long as you want to be in all good. I mean, most people want to be in a good place and have pleasure. So you manifest goodness. I mean, or good things to be.
So what about the people? What about the people that are serial killers and rapists and child rapists and all that stuff? You can't believe that they go to heaven.
Oh, they do.
Absolutely not.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, listen, I was a murderer and a rapist. I was a murderer and a rapist. I killed seven innocent people, and I raped all kinds of women in the 1600s. And it's in my book. And here I am.
I understand that, but that doesn't mean that you didn't go to hell.
I didn't. Well, I'm in hell right now. This this is my life.
No,
this is hell.
That's a whole other story. That's a whole other story. But the thing is, you know, me being a psychic medium, I get to speak with spirit all the time. And what spirit has told me is that heaven and hell is right here on earth. Okay, when we pass, either we are in our own personal heaven or in our own personal hell. Now, there have been other people that have come on my shows and have debated me on that and told me I'm full of shit. And listen, you know, everybody has an opinion. But, you know, from my perspective, when I see spirit, okay, and I look at one and I know that they're miserable, I know that they are in their own personal hell, whatever it is, whatever they're going through on the other side, I know it's not good for them. And then right next to them, I can see a spirit, and I know that they are in their own personal heaven. So I have to disagree with you on that. I mean, listen, we all have our opinions. And I respect
Chris, we're saying the same thing. We're saying the same thing. I'm not saying I'm saying there's no standard place called hell. It's your own manifestation. So if you manifest hell, you're hell. Absolutely.
I stand corrected because I don't believe that you go down to hell and you go up to heaven. That's all made up, man-made crap. You know, that's not real. All right, well, then we agree on that.
Absolutely we do.
Outstanding.
Well,
outstanding.
I still haven't gotten an answer about the demons, why he doesn't believe in demons.
Okay.
I mean, you don't need demons.
Well, it's not a matter of need if they exist. I mean, you can't, just because I don't need a pack of cigarettes doesn't mean that, you know, they don't exist. It just means that I don't have them right now.
Maybe another way to look at demons are low spirits. I mean, Chris, you do exorcisms. I mean, there are some demented low spirits out there that can be called demons. But to me, they are lone gunmen. They're not part of an army or a satanic army or part of an organized, you know, group of demons. These are just sick spirits on their own who may come together, but I mean that's their thing on the other side, and they don't go to heaven. They're in the ethereal plane because their vibration's not high, and that's what they choose to do. They can be considered demons, but they're not Satan's demons. They're just lone gunmen.
Well,
Chris, what do you think about that?
Well, I believe that there are demons. I don't think it's as prevalent as people make it out to be. You know, you watch these television shows and people getting attacked by demons, and it's a bunch of crap. You know, I've done, to date, I've done 92 exorcisms. And of the 92, I would consider three of them to be demonic. And it was just because of the energy that was associated with the spirit I was exorcising. Okay? But another way to look at demons is that there are other types of demons. You have demons of confusion. You have sexual demons. You have demons of, gambling demons. You know, demons that make you do different things, you know. And I see it all the time. You know, I walk out of Manhattan and I see, you know, this crazy woman acting all crazy. I'll never forget it. I was working in Manhattan. I had a bunch of vendors that worked for me. And I told my worker, I said, that woman over there has a sexual demon attached to her. What did this woman do? She came up, so she was disgusting. She was like a Bowery bum. She lifted up her skirt. She was completely naked, and she started touching herself, okay? That's a demon. Now, it might not be the demon in the sense of what people, you know, deem demons to be, But to me, that was a sexual demon. That was an attachment to her. That was a sexual attachment, and it was our own personal demon. I think we all have our own personal demons, whatever they are, whether we want to admit it or not.
I agree with you, Chris. I believe everybody has their own personal demons that they have to deal with. Mr. Mayor?
Absolutely.
Are you still there?
Yeah. If you,
okay.
Yeah. I'm just thinking here. I mean, yeah, if it's part of your soul and part of obsession, yeah. But once again, it's not Satan. It's just something within you, or it's a low spirit that's affecting you. So that's what I mean. It's not that Lucifer's out there causing all this trouble. There's just some free agents.
Well, I don't believe that it's Lucifer causing the trouble. I think it's I do think that there are spirits out there that just are very, very negative. But then I do believe that there are demons as well. So we kind of differ on that in some ways, and we agree in other ways, which is cool. This is a great discussion, I got to tell you. I am thoroughly enjoying this show, and Mr. Mears, I'm very happy that you were our guest tonight, because this has been a very entertaining show.
But right, I really enjoy it.
You see my point. I still believing in heaven and not in hell, even if this is hell, in my eyes, you can't have one without the other. You can't have good without the bad. You can't have sunshine without the rain. It's just a given.
Oh, yeah, Jeremy, you're absolutely right, except what you're talking about is not so much heaven and hell. It's the duality of man. It's the training course we have down here where we have good people and we have bad people, and we play roles like on a stage. And so it's kind of like what my psychic trainer told me. You know, sometimes you're the persecutor, and sometimes you're the prosecuted. But you have to play a bad role. You have to play a bad guy sometime in order to give somebody else a chance to overcome you. You know, it's like the world's a stage. So the duality is within us.
Can I just take it back 1 second? Jeremy, you realize that what you just said before he answered, that was like a country song. There's no sunshine without the rain. You know, I mean, as you were talking, I was hearing, you know, the guitar playing in the background,
you
the sexy girls in the subway.
You were hearing Otis Redding.
Well, whatever I was hearing, I'm telling you, I was moving to that beat, brother. So, what do we got? We have about 12 minutes left. Come on, Jeremy. I know we got another question there.
Yeah, I've actually got a great question right here. If I cannot remember my past lives, have I lost all that I have learned in them?
Oh no, that all that knowledge is in your higher self, your higher soul. You're just a, you know, what was explained to me was that you have an oversoul. And the oversoul is the one that controls all the rides, so to speak, here on Earth. And it's a collection. It's like we started the show, you know, that your soul is the brushstroke of all the personalities and all your past lives. That's true. Your soul is the oversoul. And so I am just a brushstroke in my soul's composition. And it's all my past lives together do we comprise the soul.
Interesting. I'm digging this show. Okay, let's see. We have another question here. Do we have any questions in the chat room? Anybody want to call in? I mean, we have 10 minutes left. We didn't have one caller tonight. I got to tell you guys, you're really letting me down. Do I have to do a rant on the listeners next week? I don't know. I mean, we have close to 30,000 listeners tonight, which is really cool. Jeremy, give out the number.
818-431-8214 is a call-in number to talk to Frank Mayers.
All right. Well, I see we have Kathy in the queue, and I know that Sam is calling in, so bring him on. Hello, Kathy. Are you with us?
Hello. Hello.
How you doing, my dear?
Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Hello,
hi,
Kathy.
Jeremy. Hi, Chris.
What's your question, Kathy?
Here's what I like to know. On his highway that he found all these past life experiences that he lived, does it affect his life today? Does he reflect on what went on then? Does it have any effect in his life that he's living now?
That's a good question. Yeah, it does. It puts me at peace to understand, to reconcile my obsession with war and violence, and to know where I am. But this knowledge is actually affecting my life to where my wife has a hard time with it, and it's causing us to split up. But it's also moving me spiritually in another direction. So, and I was told, so it's kind of a result of, it's a little bit of a going off on tangent, I know, but by me becoming more spiritual, it's causing a split in my marriage, which is going to allow me to move on to other places where I could kind of move on with my journey, if you will. So, yeah, I mean, this has really affected me, but it's affected me in a good way.
So then they are stepping stones in your lives that you're living.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Okay, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I know you have other callers calling in.
Well,
okay, I appreciate it.
Denny, take Kathy's info so I can
I have Kathy's info. Kathy lives not too far from me, so you could send me the book or I'll get her address and we can send her the book. I know she'll love it.
All right.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you guys.
You're very welcome.
Hey Kathy. Hey Kathy.
Yes.
Is she still there?
I'm here.
I've got a new book coming out for the ladies, which talks about the split up of my marriage, but what caused it was actually the spirits. The spirits actually connived together to break up my marriage and to reunite me with this woman from my past who coincidentally also turned psychic in the time that we were apart, and she's got real powers. And so the future book's called Frank and Lorraine, A Psychic Love Story, and how we were reconnected and how we communicate with each other on the other side.
Wow.
And how we are trying to overcome our problems here on Earth as far as coming back together again, because the issues of our past is revisiting ourselves. So, but the spirits are all behind this, so it's really fascinating because my dad makes a lot of appearances and tries to help in this process, and her mother. So it's kind of like we have an audience of deceased relatives cheering us on or trying to interfere with us. So it's wild. So
yeah,
it's
Frank,
a crazy story.
I have to ask you a question, Frank, because you just said something that kind of made my ears go up. You said that she became psychic.
Yes.
How see, that's something that I don't understand. How, in my mind, you can't become psychic. Either you are or you aren't. Maybe she was psychic her whole life and she didn't know it, and then she kind of like realized what she can do and learned how to be psychic. You have to explain that to me because I'm not getting that.
All right, let me tell you how it went down. It came out of my time at the Monroe Institute, and I needed to get more power, good higher vibration into me. I need to open up my heart chakra. And so I was told to give gratitude, and it really worked out well. So I come back to Ohio, and I want to continue the work that I was doing at my Monroe Institute. But like I said, I was no longer one quarter, you know, Chris George. I'm back to being Frank Maris again. So I said, well, let me go back to the magic of gratitude. So I send my book in gratitude to my ex-girlfriend and said, hey, I don't know what you're doing now. I thought you might enjoy my book, you know, yada, yada, yada. She emails me and says, oh, my God, I didn't know that you're into this stuff. I become psychic, too. I can now talk to my dead mother and my dead brother. And then as I work with her, I said, well, you got to meditate. And she started to meditate, and her abilities just exploded. So I think she always had the ability, but they just kind of turned on later in life.
All right. Well, that can happen. So, do we have? I think we have another caller in the queue. Sam, Tiffany, could you bring Sam on if he's there? We only have 5 minutes left to the show. Sam, hello. Yep, he says
Chris,
he's in the queue.
Chris, can you hear me?
Sam.
Chris, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. How you doing, sir?
All right. Good. I want to say I really enjoy your show. I love on Friday nights unwinding when I get back from work or take a few hours off and just listen to your show, and it's great. And it's thoroughly entertaining tonight. Wanted to make a point, and I think it's great to always have spiritual discussions. I may not agree with your guest tonight. I don't want to fight about it. I just may not agree with him. But
okay.
I want to give you my list of the top reincarnation movies, okay?
Okay. Well, before you do that, people should know that Sam is an Academy Award-winning director, so this is coming from somebody.
Well, I haven't won it yet. I had a short neck qualified for the Oscar.
Sam, did you see what I just did there? I just gave you a psychic reading without even knowing it.
All right, I like that, Chris. I like that. I sort of just went with it because I sensed it.
All right, what are the movies?
Okay, the top three in the correct order are The Reincarnation of Peter Proud, number one. Number two, a comedy, Defending Your Life, which has the Past Lives Pavilion, where they go into
the I remember that one. Yep.
And a hysterical scene of Albert Brooks watching himself as a native just running from, you know, from a... From like some animal chasing him, and he says to Meryl Streep, "Who are you?" And she's like, "I'm Prince Valiant." She actually says, "I'm Prince Effing Valiant," but I can't say that on the air. And number one is Dead Again, starring and directed by 5-time Academy Award nominee Kenneth Branagh. Great movie.
Am I beautiful? Beautiful. Hey, you know, Sam, you know I love when you call in, right?
Yeah, I love the show. It's very eclectic, and it's a great way to unwind on Friday nights, and it's become a routine for me. Sometimes I don't call in, sometimes I do. I have a hard time finding it sometimes. Like, now I see where the button was, but they should take you right to the show when you go there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'll tell you what. Out of all the networks out there, this is probably the easiest chat room to get to. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, people have been talking about doing the show on manifesting. I know that's something that you really believe in, Sam. So when we do that show, we will actually have you come on as a guest if you'd like.
I would love. I know you mentioned me being a guest a few weeks back when you were ready. I would love to be a guest on that one because that's been about my life, has been manifesting. And I've had downs, Chris. You know, you've seen me at some downs, but you've seen me at some ups. And it's okay to have downs, but you got to come back up. That's the way it is.
That's
you got
right.
to come back
Sam,
up.
Sam,
you've done it.
Look,
You rebuilt your show, Chris, and your website. No one can stop you. Only you
can
stop you.
Well, listen, Sam, thank you for calling in. We only have about 60 seconds left. We have to say goodbye to our guests, and I'm sure you'll be on next week. So I just want to say thank you to our guests. I want to say thank you to our guest, Frank Ayers, for coming on tonight. This has been a phenomenal show. We are going to push the hell out of it on the archives because people deserve to hear this show. And once again, thank you so much for being our guest.
Yes, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Chris.
I'm
honored to be there, especially to speak with you, Chris. I mean, you are a font of wisdom and talent. So I mean that sincerely.
Jesus.
Anyway, and Jeremy will get you a copy of the archive. He'll send that to you tomorrow. And Jeremy, who is our guest for next week?
Hopefully somebody that won't build your ego so bad that you can't fit through the door. Regina Cates, author of Lead With Your Heart. Thank you guys for joining us. Bye-bye.
Have a good night, everybody. And we're done. Mr. Mears, that was a great show. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I appreciate the opportunity.
Mr. Mears.
So,
all right, you take care, guys.
Have a good night.
Okay. Very
Bye-bye.
Good. You have a good one. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Are we good, Denny?
You guys are good. He's gone. My sweet Jesus. That's all I got.
We weren't that hard on him, though. We're good.
You were better than I would have been. I would have been like, so, yeah. I saw a movie about that. When's the last time? And some of the things he was coming up with, I was just kind of like, right.
Yeah. he was a nice guy, though. You know, that's the thing, you know.
You know, I told you he's a super nice guy.
Yeah, see, with me, the thing is, if you're a fraud, and I thought he was, if you're a nice guy, I'm not going to destroy you. But if you're somebody like the Demon Doctors, I'm going to crush you. And, you know, I couldn't crush him because he was a nice guy, but I messed with him a little bit.
he's a nice guy, but my problem in life is the fact that it's not, I'm not saying that it's completely impossible, but I've never heard anybody have such vibrant flashbacks or whatever.
Yeah,
past life or whatever. And Jeremy made a very good point during the show saying he's too detailed. And in psychology,
right,
that's what you look out for. If somebody has so much detail to a story, there's clearly – because even if it is the truth, you don't have